This is Free Speech Radio News. It's Thursday, the 4th of May, 2006. From the studios of KPFK in LA, I'm Aura Bogado. On today's newscast, California Attorney General Bill Lockyer opens an investigation into possible gas gouging. Maoist rebels in Nepal agree to peace talks as a resolution is passed to hold a constituent assembly. And the Zapatistas' other campaign is suspended after the federal police raids the community of San Salvador Atenco. We'll bring you all that and more after the headlines.
I'm Shannon Young with the Free Speech Radio News headlines. Street blockades have cropped up around Mexico City today after a battle yesterday between townspeople and police near the Mexican capital left one 14-year-old dead. The confrontation prompted the declaration of a red alert, now in effect in Mexico's Zapatista rebel territory. Luis Ruiz reports from San Cristobal de las Casas, Chiapas.
Late Wednesday, Subcomandante Marcos, who is in Mexico City on a countrywide tour speaking about the Zapatistas' other campaign, declared the Zapatista army go on immediate red alert in rebel territory, the suspension of the other campaign, and that the rebels' councils of good government close their offices throughout the state of Chiapas and take refuge in the event of an eventual military action against rebel communities. The announcement came after state and federal police clashed for more than 12 hours with community members from San Salvador Atenco in the state of Mexico. As of 8 o'clock this morning, we received confirmation that indeed all of the offices of the Councils of Good Government and the Caracoles had been closed and cleared out until further notice. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Luz Ruiz and Tim Russo in San Cristobal de las Casas, Chiapas.
Indigenous Mapuche continue to occupy the Chilean consulate in the city of Bariloche in southern Argentina. Matt Goldin reports from Buenos Aires.
A group of Argentine Mapuche yesterday began an occupation in the consulate of Chile, in Bariloche, demanding the freedom of four imprisoned Mapuche people in Chile. The Mapuche prisoners have been on hunger strike for 51 days, and on Sunday they stopped consuming all liquids. They are reportedly in a very delicate state of health. The imprisoned Mapuche were sentenced in 2003 to 10 years and 1 day of prison for setting fire to property owned by the Mininco Forestry Company. They were also ordered to pay a fine of nearly $900,000 in damages to the company. The Mapuche were tried under Chile's anti-terrorism laws, and secret hooded witnesses testified against them at their trial. In addition to the occupation of the consulate in Bariloche, protests were carried out at the doors of the Chilean consulates in Bolivia and England. Reporting for Free Speech Radio News, this is Matt Goldin from Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Lobby reform legislation narrowly passed the House of Representatives yesterday by a vote of 217 to 213. Many Republicans defected from their party in opposition to the bill, saying it does little to rein in lobbyists and make their work in Washington more transparent. Today in the Senate, the $107 billion emergency supplemental passed by a large majority. The funds will pay for the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the war on terror, and Hurricane Katrina recovery. President Bush has threatened to veto the bill if it totals more than the $92 billion he requested. The House and Senate must reach a compromise before both bills are sent to the president's desk. French Prime Minister Dominique de Villepin today resisted mounting pressure to resign, in the midst of a scandal which has been compared to the U.S.'s Watergate affair. Tony Cross in Paris takes a look at what's become known as the Clearstream affair.
Le nom de Nicolas Sarkozy.
At a press conference today, Dominique de Villepin denies having asked former Secret Service Chief General Philippe Rondeau to dig the dirt on Nicolas Sarkozy, his main rival to be the right-wing candidate in next year's presidential election. But his audience didn't seem convinced after the newspaper Le Monde published what it claims are excerpts from Rondeau's notes of a meeting with Villepin in 2004 and of his testimony to judges investigating the affair. Back when Villepin was Foreign Affairs Minister, an anonymous source claimed that a number of businessmen and politicians had secret bank accounts with the Luxembourg-based finance house Clearstream. One of the names on the list was current Interior Minister Nicolas Sarkozy, who makes no secret of his ambition to be president. Le Monde claims that Villepin and his principal backer, President Jacques Chirac, asked the former top spy to take a special look at the charges against Sarkozy. And the managing director of Le Point magazine, François-Olivier Gisbert, claims that Villepin later told him, if the papers do their work, Sarkozy's finished. The initial accusations now seem to have been untrue, and an inquiry is underway to uncover the mysterious source. Villepin today dismissed the accusations of abuse of power as lies and slanders, hinting that they were part of a plot against him. But he is politically fragile after last year's riots and this year's humiliation at the hands of the unions over his controversial youth employment scheme, so it may be the clear stream will finish him rather than his detested rival. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Tony Cross in Paris.
Climatologists are now saying that global warming is affecting and altering complex wind and current patterns in the Pacific Ocean. In a report published today in the journal Nature, scientist Gabriel Vecchi of the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association writes that the Pacific wind system, known as the Walker Circulation, has lost 3% of its strength since the mid-1880s and predicts that it could weaken by 10% within the next 100 years. Changes in the Walker Circulation are known to contribute to the so-called El Niño weather phenomena. Vecchi and his research team say greenhouse gases are to blame. I'm Shannon Young for Free Speech Radio News.
Zapatistas have declared a red alert, closing Caracoles and autonomous municipalities in the state of Chiapas after the violent eviction yesterday of workers and farmers trying to sell flowers in a market near Mexico City, where Walmart is attempting to build another superstore, left two dead and at least 48 people injured. Social groups, student and indigenous organizations are shutting down highways and occupying schools today. Demonstrations at Mexican consulates in New York and Los Angeles are scheduled to begin tomorrow, denouncing the federal police's actions. Mass mobilizations are already occurring throughout Mexico City, where Subcomandante Marcos is participating in pacifist political acts. FSRN's Vladimir Flores reports.
Thousands of police took the town of San Salvador Atenco by force this morning, searching from house to house for members of the People's Front in Defense of the Land. A violent confrontation yesterday between townspeople and police left a 14-year-old boy dead and dozens seriously injured. Over 200 townspeople have since been taken into police custody. During a rally in Mexico City yesterday, Zapatista Subcomandante Marcos declared a red alert in Zapatista rebel territory and called for mobilizations.
No sabemos ustedes, pero los zapatistas somos hoy.
We don't know about you all, but we Zapatistas today are Atenco. The troops of the Zapatista Army of National Liberation have already been put on red alert. We are asking for actions and mobilizations to be planned and carried out throughout the country in support of the People's Front in Defense of the Land.
Frente de Pueblos en Defensa de la Tierra.
As part of the nationwide tour known as the Other Campaign, the Zapatista caravan stayed in San Salvador Atenco just last week. The town made international headlines in the summer of 2002 when a popular uprising prevented the expropriation of communal land for the construction of a new international airport for Mexico City. Atenco resident America del Valle participated in that uprising and now has an arrest warrant over her head.
It's a provocation that isn't just related to the Other Campaign, because they know perfectly well that once the Other Campaign has passed through our towns, the movement in the region is strengthened. On the other hand, they are carrying out a standing vendetta ever since we were able to stop the federal government's plan for its rotten airport.
President Vicente Fox today said the campesinos' actions represent a threat for Mexican society. A massive police operation is in effect throughout the Mexican capital today, but that hasn't stopped hundreds of people from blockading the city's major roads. Ashantil, a university student, spoke to FSRM from a blockade in the western part of the city this morning.
There are around 500 of us here, indigenous people and women. We are gathered here because there's a call out that if there are confrontations, we keep it calm.
The blockade of Mexico City's major highways continue at airtime, and further actions and demonstrations have been announced for later today. For FSRN, I am Vladimir Flores reporting.
Senate Judiciary Committee members cast their vote today for Randy Smith of Idaho, a Bush nominee for the position of U.S. Ninth Circuit Court Judge. Smith won the nomination with a slim two-vote margin. Committee members voted along strict party lines, which critics condemn, citing that circuit courts deal with interpreting law, not partisan party issues. FSRN's Anastasia Genetstitska has more from D.C.
President Bush has nominated Norman Randy Smith for a seat on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. For the past 10 years, Judge Smith has been a state district judge for Idaho's 6th Judicial District. He is formerly a chairman of his state's Republican Party. Prior to becoming a state court judge, he had a long career representing some of Idaho's largest corporate interests. Judge Smith's nomination has sparked mild controversy because President Bush nominated him to a seat vacated by senior judge Stephen Trott, who had been appointed as a Californian, in a seat traditionally held for a California judge. Therefore, it came as no surprise that California Senator Dianne Feinstein, a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, opposed the nomination of Randy Smith.
Adding another judgeship to Idaho essentially gives that state 7.2% of the circuit's judgeships. That's a percentage of judges six times greater than Idaho's percentage of cases, which is 1.2% of the Ninth Circuit's total appeals dockets. Now, that one judgeship that Idaho has is more than enough to handle the modest caseload that comes from the state.
Senator Leahy, a Democrat from Vermont, agreed with Senator Feinstein. He viewed this nomination as a partisan move on the part of President Bush.
I'll support the senators from California and their objection to this maneuver. So it's probably no coincidence that both times, both in the Claude Allen case and this time, the White House sought to shift a judgeship from a state represented by two Democratic senators to a state represented by two Republican senators.
The discussion of Brett Kavanaugh's candidacy faced similar opposition on the part of the Democrats. Currently serving as an assistant to the president, he was called a partisan warrior with little appropriate legal experience. Senator Leahy used the debate as an opportunity to criticize President Bush's attitude towards judicial nominations.
I would urge the president to, act as a uniter, not a divider. I recall that as a campaign pledge. Here's a very, very easy way to fulfill his pledge to the American people to be a uniter, not a divider. Nominate him for the Idaho seat.
Yeah.
I don't think the senator from California would have any problem with that. And nominate a Californian for the California seat.
Senator Sessions, a Republican from Alabama, mildly opposed this view.
This seat is not clearly a California seat. In 35, the seat was held by Judge Bert Haney of Oregon for 9 years. Then Judge Homer Bowen of Washington held it for 12 years. Clear thing, I agree with the senator. We ought to be very careful before we start moving these seats around. But I don't think this one is at all clear. And in fact, justice would indicate that Idaho ought to have a seat.
The character of the debate over this nomination was thus distinctly along the party lines. Edward Whelan, president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, considers this a wrong way to tackle this issue.
A lot of senators seem to be under the mistaken conception that judges represent states. Courts of appeals judges hear cases that arise equally across the different states in their circuit, so the whole fiction that senators on both sides of the aisle have that someone is a California judge or an Idaho judge is a fiction derived from Senate pork.
Where do you think does this fiction come from?
It comes from senators' desire to offer patronage to their constituents, not from anything in the law, not from anything related to the actual role of courts of appeals judges.
U.S. Court of Appeals has two more vacant seats. The Senate Judiciary Committee will vote on the next candidacy, that of Brett Kavanaugh, next Tuesday. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Anastasia Gnezditskaya in Washington, D.C.
High costs at the gas pumps and higher profits for the oil and gas industry have prompted California Attorney General Bill Lockyer to investigate oil companies on gas gouging. Other states across the country are doing the same, and consumer rights groups are calling for a windfall tax to invest in alternative energy. FSRN's Christina Anastad reports.
The 21 oil refiners in California, including ExxonMobil, Shell, Valero, BP, and their CEOs, are under investigation by State Attorney General Bill Lockyer for price gouging at the gas pumps. Attorney General Bill Lockyer.
The oil company's attitude is, if it's not illegal, it's okay. Probably we can't prove illegality. They don't need to break the law to stick it to consumers. That's the nature of an oligopolistic market. But we can do some things to provide better fuel standards for automobiles, alternative energy sources. There's a lot we can do to increase competition and reduce demand.
Lockyer and nine other state attorneys general, including Oregon and New York, are also challenging the Bush administration's fuel economy standards they say haven't changed in 20 years, would preempt tougher state emission laws, and continue to increase gas prices. Meanwhile, consumer advocates are pushing for a national windfall tax on oil companies' increased profits. Tyson Slocum is director of Public Citizens Energy Program.
On average, it costs a company like ExxonMobil about $20 to extract a barrel of oil, whether that's in Nigeria or California. They're turning around and selling that for $70 a barrel. That is not illegal. It is not going to register on any of these investigations into price gouging. So the answer is to implement a windfall profits tax on these huge earnings that the oil companies are enjoying and use the proceeds of that windfall profits tax to invest in sustainable energy solutions and mass transit and energy efficiency, all the things that are going to help solve America's energy crisis.
But a windfall tax may be difficult to pass through Congress. According to the Center for Responsive Politics, this year the oil and gas industry has contributed over $7 million to congressional campaigns, with 80% of it going to Republicans. That's why the grassroots group Californians for Clean Energy is taking the issue to the people. The California group is seeking to get a windfall tax on oil refiners in the state on the November ballot. For FSRN, I'm Christina Onnested.
Brother Cornell West, I'm just hoping and praying that you have the good enough sense to always tune in to Free Speech Radio News. Lays bare the truth and inspires you to fight for justice. Free Speech Radio News.
Maoist rebels in Nepal have agreed today to an offer made by Nepal's new cabinet to enter into peace talks, which might bring an end to the decade-old insurgency, which has claimed the lives of over 13,000 people. Meanwhile, the Seven Parties Alliance, or SPA, has finally passed a resolution to hold elections for a constituent assembly that would draft a new constitution. Most of the SPA constituents are in favor of dismantling the institution of monarchy and assure a republican polity, which even Maoist rebels have unequivocally insisted for. But many doubt that the proposed constituent assembly and a new constitution may be actualized as smoothly as the parliamentarians pass their resolution. FSRN's PC Dubey has more from Kathmandu.
April 30 was a watershed in the history of the Nepalese parliament when it unanimously passed a resolution to hold an election for a constituent assembly that would draft a new constitution. The new document could jettison the monarchy that has earned the people's wrath due to King Gyanendra's misuse of the present 1990 constitution to foist autocratic rule in the country. The parliamentarians claimed that they had opted for the Constituent Assembly because it was the people's wish, as large numbers of people gathered at its gate clamoring for end of the king's rule.
Not His Majesty's government, but only Nepal's government.
Nepal Communist Party Chief Madhav Kumar Nepal says that the Constituent Assembly is the anchor of the people's movement. There should be no loopholes that would allow for the usurpation of the people's power.
As per the people's aspirations, our aim is to make Nepalese people masters of the country, to establish state power among the people, and to institutionalize all the accomplishments the people's movement has made. We want to give a new political shape to Nepal through the election for a constituent assembly. We are gearing up for all these goals.
The proposed Constituent Assembly would craft a new constitution and has raised hopes among over a dozen indigenous ethnic communities who constitute some 50% of Nepal's total population. Until now, They have been denied access to the corridors of powers due to the inherent discriminatory parameters of the 1990 Constitution. The real power has remained in the hands of the high caste Hindus, who constitute around 31% of the Nepalese population. Nirmal Man Tuladhar, a senior professor of Asian studies at local Tribhuvan University, feels that the Constituent Assembly would give ethnic communities their legitimate rights as citizens of the country.
Everybody agrees to include all the indigenous people of Nepal in this Constitutional Assembly, you mean. There is a great awareness among the indigenous people. They should be represented in the constitution making. In the earlier 1990 constitution, nobody represented from indigenous people then. That's why this issue came up again. Now these days we talk about inclusive democracy. So everybody coming from different background, from different ethnic indigenous group should be included. This will give equal opportunity to all.
Sant Bahadur Gurung, a member of the indigenous ethnic Gurung community and vice chairman of the National Foundation for Development of Indigenous Nationalities, NFDIN, is focused on ensuring an equitable share for indigenous people in the power and privileges of the state as members of the Constituent Assembly.
So we have formed a committee to work on this particular area. What are the requirements, or what are the needs, and what are the things to be or included in the assembly?
Ravikant Mishra, a political analyst specializing in constitutional issues, says that the current resolution for a constituent assembly smacks of arrogance, a sort of lunacy that stems from street politics gripping the political leaders. He says the leaders should discern the subtleties of the existing political system, which gains strength from the 1990 constitution.
The parliament has been revived. Its members should behave as lawmakers. Unfortunately, they are still behaving as a street protester, passing the resolution to hold election for a constituent assembly to write a new constitution is nothing but a street politics. They have become lawmakers under this constitution. How can they constitutionally scrap it?
Mishra counsels the leaders to discern the subtleties of the 1990 constitution. They should not try to rip it off, rather they should remedy it. They are not the progenies of revolution, but of a mass movement.
They are talking of creating a republic. The present system does not allow that. Constitutional monarchy is a fundamental feature of 1999 constitution. In no way it can be amended or annulled. Of course, parliament can radically reduce the powers of the king and turn him into its mere rubber stamp. Only Article 1 to 7 needs to be deleted. This article gives extraordinary powers to the king, which he has been whimsically misusing. Once parliament amends this article, the king would remain with crown, but without any teeth to bite.
Political parties have simply passed the resolution. They have not spelled out its modalities and parameters. Indigenous people are currently in the forefront of staking their share in the Constituent Assembly because they have been already fighting for it long before the current people's flare-up. Women and other religious minorities are also trying for their inclusion in the assembly, but they are less vociferous than the indigenous groups. From Kathmandu, I am P.C. Dubey for Free Speech Radio News.
You are listening to Free Speech Radio News, found online at www.fsrn.org. That's fsrn.org. South Africa celebrated its 12th anniversary of non-racial elections this week. FSRN correspondent Turna Gisi spent it with farm workers fighting displacement in the wealthy wine-producing region of the Western Cape.
Stellenbosch, postcard perfect little town, noted for its vineyards and its Afrikaans language university. Around 200 marchers, farm workers, unionists, and other supporters have walked, danced, and sung the 2 miles from the town center to the sprawling wine estates of Lanzarach and Nordsford. Wendy Picure, General Secretary of Farm Worker Union Sikhula Sonke, addresses the crowd.
Today, as we celebrate Freedom Day, we declare to the country that we know no freedom. What we have seen over the last 11 years has been farmers using their mountains of money and lawyers to deny us opportunity to move to greater freedom and equality.
Far-reaching land reform was one of the key tasks facing the ANC government elected in 1994. But in 12 years, it has managed to return just 3% of agricultural land to black ownership. In the Yonkershoek Valley, farm owners are systematically evicting farm workers from their homes, homes that many of them were born in. In many cases, these houses are being renovated and turned into trendy accommodation for tourists and students from the University of Stellenbosch.
People want to send a message to the house. Yeah, many people come, so we must just arrange that. I think we must send about 30 people.
Police turn the marchers away from the gates of the first farm and then hold it up at the second. There are minor scuffles as a few marchers break through and race towards the disputed houses. Two small groups are eventually allowed through the police line to inspect the farm cottages and present their demands to one of the farm's managers. Fatima Shabuddin, director of the Women on Farms project, tells him that despite his eviction notices, no one will be leaving the farm.
And we are here today on Freedom Day to tell you that this is what freedom is about. People's right to 10-year security. That on this farm you've built houses with state subsidies. And now you want to evict people from houses that are theirs, built with public money.
Stephen Birch, the farm's human resources manager, accepts the statement of demands but refuses to comment. Some of the farm dwellers threatened with eviction are there to meet us. One of the farm dwellers, Flori Arison, shows us a set of padlocks on the water tank.
Basically, and Flori and them live on this farm. The water was disconnected about 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Which basically means that people live in the farm on the houses but have no access to water. And the only way to get water is actually to steal water at the farm next door.
Some of the other workers' electricity has also been disconnected. Fatima Shabuddin explains that this is all meant to force the farm dwellers to accept an offer to be relocated to one of the towns in the area.
Of course, farmers will claim that farm workers have choices. But if you know power relationships between rich white owners and poor black farm workers in this country, it's not a negotiation. The issue is here, if there's no intervention, you're basically going to see the creation of a white valley.
A modern-day enclave of apartheid. The picturesque valley inhabited by rich white land owners, serviced by an army of black workers lumped together in a hidden township somewhere, commuting in on a daily basis to do the work that produces the wealth. Aunt Flory's small cottage had its water turned off months ago, but her new, white neighbors have their utilities, and several shiny cars parked just yards from her front door.
And I have to say, also enough is enough.
When we come back on the 16th of June, if they are not gone, we will take over those houses. But comrades, today...
Sikula Sonke's Wendy Pekir reads aloud from the Declaration of Defense.
We declare to all of South Africa that we are no longer afraid. We have nothing else to lose. Our freedom has been reduced to a life of white slaves in the land of our birth. The Freedom Charter is what we fought for, and we declare that the land will be owned by those who work.
From the Yonkershoek Valley, I am Tena Guse for Free Speech Radio News.
Free Speech Radio News is a worker-run collective produced at Pacifica Stations, KPFA in Berkeley, and KPFK in Los Angeles. Our newscast is produced by Simba Russo and Monica Lopez. Headlines editor is Shannon Young. Leon Caldwell is our Washington editor. Our technical production team includes Eric Klein and Antonio Ortiz. For archives of this or any other FSRN newscast or documentary, you can check out our website at www.fsrn.org. You can also email us your questions, comments, or story ideas to comments@fsrn.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Aura Abogado.